Welcome to another episode of Testing Peers. Today, we're going to be talking about content creation. So I'm Tara, not one of your normal guests, but I do have your regular host, Chris Armstrong here, and another special guest, Vernon Richards. Before we begin, I'd like to take a moment to thank Saffron QA for continuing to be a sponsor, and they've been here to support the testing community. Therefore, should any of our listeners be in the market for a new job in testing or hiring new talent for your team, reach out to Ben. He can be contacted via email at ben@saffronqa.co.uk. So Vernon, why don't you get us started? Want to get us all warmed up with a banter topic?
Okay, so I have traveled to Europe today. And I flew out of Luton Airport, which is my most hated airport that I've ever used in my life. And I have traveled on a low-cost airline, which is an utter pain in the backside. So it's all added up to a deeply unpleasant trip and one that I don't want to repeat, not because of the destination, but because of the means of travel. So I was wondering, what is your pet peeves when traveling, whether it's by land, sea, or air?
Ooh, I have to say it's usually just other travelers. I don't care what method or if it's, you know, the best tickets on the planet, the worst airline on the planet. It's those other travelers that can either make the trip amazing or like you stepped into your worst nightmare, I think.
It's a good one. I think for me, probably I would say the things that make me feel bad when I'm traveling. So like I've been on a coach that's driven around a volcano on very, very thin, narrow roads, and I felt sick. I've been on the back of a tuk-tuk on a highway in Bangkok, and I felt scared for my life. I've been on a plane that's gone through terrible turbulence, and I've been scared for my life. And I've been on a boat that was like had a glass bottom that you went down to go and look at all the beautiful fish in Egypt, and I felt sick. It's things that make me feel bad. That's why I mean, I was talking to Tara about this earlier. Traveling, I get super anxious about things going wrong, and I don't get super anxious about feeling ill or sick or any of those things. But actually, like when I'm on a plane, I'm always scared something's going to go wrong because I've seen Final Destination and things like that.
There's an entire generation that's seen that movie and has a little bit of like fear for our lives.
You follow a truck that's got a bunch of but of trees behind it and you're like, I am moving.
Exactly. I will exit the highway if I have to.
Scarred.
Wow.
What about you, Ben? Anything else apart from the airline?
What I don't like, so today's, well, it's two things. So today's experience was all around that whole low-cost airline vibe. When they work, they are absolutely fantastic. Like, they really do fill a gap in the market, and they're awesome. They go to destinations that, you know, the bigger airlines don't go. So that's they're absolutely incredible for that. What I hate, though, is that the parameters that you have to stick within for that to happen are so narrow that when you, it's so easy to fall outside, and then it's like, oh, you breathed at the wrong time. So that'll be $10 million, please. Or, you know, you're like, what is going, huh? On the other airline, I can breathe whenever I like. Well, no, you're supposed to breathe at the correct time. And you didn't, so that's a charge. Thank you very much. And that is annoying. And also the planes that they use are the least comfortable planes ever.
Yeah,
Like
that's
you're
very
on,
true.
you can manage it for an hour, or you know, I'm talking for, you can manage it for an hour, it's cool. But when you're like traveling for 3 hours and up, 4 hours, man, it's like,
I've done 6 hours on a low cost airline.
oh, you see, that's I could not do it. I would question my need to go to that destination if that was the only way to get there. Honestly, like,
Advantages can be with these things. Just a big tick in their favor is I can check in on my flight a week or two in advance on a low cost airline, if not more. With the likes of like British Airways, those sorts of folks, it's like 24 hours.
Well, it's funny you should use that example because that is one of the parameters that because not only can you check in 10 million years in advance, you're actually supposed to check in 10 million years in advance. If you think that you're on a quote unquote normal airline like me and you just rock up to the airport, not realizing that that is the standard operating procedure, and they say, oh, you want to check in here? That'll be $10 million. I'm like, what? What are you talking about? I'm sorry, what? Well, you were supposed to check in online. So now you have to pay in order to get on the plane that you've already paid to get on. I'm like, what?
Lessons
So
learned there, Vern.
you think the lesson is I'm supposed to check in. The lesson is I'm not using these bloody airlines again
It's
unless
I
my
the
life.
fewer people I have to speak to on my journey to get on an aeroplane, the happier I'm going to be.
Oh, I get that. My thing is, why are you charging me such an extortionate amount of money to press a couple of buttons? And I've worked for a low-cost airline line or two. I literally know the buttons that you're pressing. Like, I could press them.
Like, let me just do it. It'll be fun.
Yeah. So there's that. And then the other thing is, because I'm a pain, this is the last one because we've been going on a bit. Sorry, that's my bad. The last one is, this is going to make everyone groan. I'm vegan. And so when I requested my special meal to travel to see Tara a couple of weeks ago, which is 10 hours in the air, and they don't have your meal, you're just like, oh, really? And then on the way back, they did have my meal. They served the meal. It was completely cold. They hadn't warmed it up. So I gave them,
Oh.
I said, hey, this is cold. Could you warm it up? The good news is they warmed it up. The bad news is they gave it to somebody else after they warmed it up.
No.
Absolutely unbelievable scenes. So, yeah, I'm just, these are all first world problems. I'm just being a bit, sensitive and, snowflakey, perhaps. I don't know. But
Sometimes it's good to have group therapy on the testing piers. It's
I
fine.
appreciate
That's true.
my fellow testing peers in the studio and listening for indulging my grumbling. Thank you so much, people.
Well, let's move on to creating content. I guess
Yeah.
we might have created content among us. We might be doing it as we speak right now. But I guess my sort of opening question to you regarding creating content would be, what the hell are you doing? Why are you doing it?
Oh, that's not a fair question because every piece of content has a different purpose, right? Like sometimes it's because you need to vent about that thing that's driving you berserk. And I've seen it a million times, so I'm going to write a blog and put out a video about it because everybody's doing it and needs to stop. But sometimes it's like, hey, I found this really cool thing and I want to share it with you guys.
Yeah, that's a good one. That's a good reason. Definitely. Has your approach to creating content changed since you started doing it?
Me? I mean, gosh, I've only really started creating content about a year ago. Anything before that was generally just something I made for my own purposes, things that, documentation and notes that I thought, oh, this might serve me well later. So that's kind of where I started, and now I'm like, I want to make things shinier and show people things and make it more interactive and things that I would actually seek out as content that I would consume instead of just, fancy notes. What about you, Vernon?
Oh, so the original question was why are we
Yeah.
creating? Okay, so for me, I am trying to be, there's two things. I'm trying to be more deliberate about my personal brand, because as cringy as that sounds, it's one of those things where, like it or not, we all have a personal brand, whether it exists within your company, whether it exists out in the wider industry, in the wider world. And so I would like to be a bit more deliberate about what that is, for one. And the second one, and this is probably, the first one feeds this one, is that I am increasingly and genuinely stressed out about my income being from a single source, a day job. And so I would like to figure out how I can create other ways of making money so that I don't, so I can manage this really like debilitating stress about being made redundant or, having to find another job if yeah, Chris is smiling at me right now, people. So yeah, it's but the way to do that is to not be that stereotypical quote unquote sleazy salesperson. It's actually to try and help people with the skills and the knowledge that you have. And then the income will, be a consequence of that. Like, so you provide value out into the world, and then the world will somehow reward you for that, or find some way to give you something in return. It sounds a bit woo-woo, but I've seen it happen to people that I can like pick up my phone and call now, so I know it's real. So
Yeah,
I'm trying to get better at that.
it's a good to have that sort of motivation behind these things, I think, because we all got different whys, but they probably all kind of have the sort of two common threads, which is kind of helping other people and helping me. Like I started the first time I started creating any content that was to do with testing would have been when I first became like a leader, and I'd started to consume a lot of blogs and testing Twitter, remember that? And I'd started to sort of share them amongst the test team, and I thought, well, actually, if I can sort of make this, take this these sort of texts and these ideas, and I can sort of reframe them in a way that is conversational from my own context that might be more approachable or relatable to the audience, or an audience who think and maybe address things in a similar way to the way that my brain's put together, maybe that will help those folks. And my immediate target was always the audience of folks that were in and around my circle in the workplace. So my little mind got slightly blown at the point where folks outside of my organization were consuming my content and even giving feedback on anything. That was kind of wild, as a journey. Now, my blogging has been pretty terrible since the pandemic hit. I don't know what happened to my brain. Well, lots of things happened in the pandemic. I maybe written about four or five blogs. I've just not been able to engage it. But in that time, content creation has shifted for me to this thing where I talk more into one of these microphones. We have this podcast. I've been in other things, spoken at conferences, and do the ranting with the 9 out of 10 testers and folks. And that's still putting content and hopefully sharing and helping. The benefit that I'm getting, aside from the personal brand stuff that you spoke about, and I think that is a tangible like visibility and sort of sells yourself and gives you some credibility. I also find it's kind of sharpened a lot of my own thoughts. It's challenged me. It's given me like reassurance, sanity checks, challenged me in a way that I've thought and approached things in a way that I probably wouldn't have done before, which hopefully has made me a bit wiser and a bit more reasoned and better thought through on things. But it's also made me not so scared to put ideas out there, because when I put those things out there, that's when the feedback comes.
Oh, absolutely. And I do think that brand that you're talking about, that was very secondary and almost accidental, right? Like, I know the things that I'm passionate about and I know the things that I can help with. And so it kind of evolved from there to the point where you have to start thinking about like, okay, maybe I need to frame this better, to put myself out there a little bit more, because when that feedback comes in and you are challenging yourself. I've gotten some amazing feedback from people where I've gone, maybe I don't understand that as well as I thought I did. Let's get, let's call Chris in, let's call Vernon in and see what they have to say about it. And it builds out that network and that brand and that expertise a little bit more. And it really is a vehicle for growth that I did not anticipate.
Yeah, 100%. I agree with everything that you both said. Plus one, all of that, definitely.
I do feel your pain though, Chris, about writing blogs. I feel like some days that I can sit and write all day and stuff just flows out, and then I can go for months at a time where I'm like, I got nothing.
I managed to write a blog, 26 in 1 year, one every fortnight for an entire year early in my blogging journey. And it was shortly before I did a Ministry of Testing panel on writing blogs. Did I stop being able to write blogs? It's a very well,
Oh, did you jinx yourself?
I
It's
mean.
funny. It's funny that you should mention writing and consistency, because it probably has taken me 10 minutes before I mentioned Ship 30. So Ship 30, for people who don't know, if you saw me writing on Twitter and or LinkedIn last year, it was almost certainly because of Ship 30. So Ship 30 is, I don't even know what to call it. It's kind of like a course, it's kind of like a challenge. And the name Ship 30 for 30 is about creating one piece of written content a day for 30 days in a row to learn the art of what they call digital writing. So writing online, which they position to be quite different. So I keep saying they. So Nicholas Cole and Dickie Bush are the two people that created this thing. And man, listen, that thing has been life-changing. I might be overdoing it here, but it's just been absolutely ridiculous. So I've written in the last year, I went from I have nothing written on the internet to I now have probably around 100 articles and posts and things written on the internet. And I'm not even counting the tweets. I'm just talking about posts. And that's directly because of that. And what Chris said is 100% bang on around your ideas get sharper, because you have to refine what you say, and they also get sharper because of what Tara said, which is how people will give you feedback. Some of it is, this is awesome. Here's why it's awesome. Some of it is, this is terrible. Here's why it's terrible. Some of it is, I don't understand this, so I'm gonna just debate with you. And you're like, oh, this is interesting, and that's interesting. And the reason why I was triggered to talk about Ship 30 is one of the things they talk about in that experience course is how to come up with ideas of things to write. And one of the things they talk about is the 2-year test. And that is, what were you learning 2 years ago? Or what were you trying to figure out 2 years ago? Who were you 2 years ago? And then write to that person. So you were all, so for me, 2 years ago, well, 2021, I was trying to learn about coaching. And I was trying to learn about how to use that in testing. And I was also starting to learn about entrepreneurship and things like that. So I should write about those things. because there's another me out there, because the internet, and there are billions of people on it. There's going to be at least one other person who's going to be interested in what you've got to say. And that's the whole assumption. That's the whole foundation. Like, there are all these tools like Twitter, LinkedIn, that are built to put stuff in front of eyeballs. So you just need to create the stuff. And if you put it in the right place where there are already eyeballs, then they'll take care of the rest. And that's where people start talking about algorithms and this and that. But the fundamental thing is, get the ideas out of your head. Think about what problems were you trying to solve 2 years ago that you've now solved, and help other people solve those same problems. Like, talk about what you learned. And then there's this whole thing. And they're not the only people who talk about how to write, but I've just gone down this rabbit hole of writing, copywriting. It's just absolutely fantastic. I am here for it. And my latest thing is that I'm trying to learn how to be a ghostwriter now, so I can write for other people. So that's a pretty
well, Vernon's changed his little banner at the top of his socials to say ghostwriting. He is owning that thing publicly.
Yeah. Well, don't tempt me, because it sounds like I just need to get a little bit more practice out there. But I'll just hire Vernon to ghostwrite for me. No, I just pulled up their website, and I like this: the three killers of great writing: overthinking, over editing, and falling out of practice. And I think, particularly as QA, I have a really bad habit of those first two, of overthinking it and then over editing it, right? Because we live in the quality space. I want it to be perfect. And I'm sending it out to other testers who are going to, by nature, look for errors. So it's a little nerve-wracking, but I might have to look into that one, Vernon.
Yeah, if anyone listening to this has any questions about that, please hit me up, and I'll happily talk about it all day long. I managed to convince three other of our testing peers, I guess you could say, to do Ship 30, and I know two of them definitely found it useful. And the third one did as well, but didn't get as stuck into it as he wanted to. But it's the whole creating content and putting out into the world. It's been a game changer. It's been an absolute game changer for me.
Do you find that the writing habit helps with other content forms too, like you're presenting and speaking at events and things like that?
Yeah, it's like everything. Everything starts with getting the idea out of your head into some other medium. And so writing is one way where you can start to structure the idea, and you first give it some shape or some life, and you can start to play around with it, move it around. So, if you were to create YouTube videos, a lot of people start by writing a script for the YouTube video. That's writing. Or if you're trying, and this is why I think this is relevant for the audience. If you are a tester of any level experience and you're trying to get your ideas shared with the company, you're probably going to use email. You're probably going to use Slack. You're probably going to use Confluence, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Right? It's going to be some kind of written medium will be involved. So the more effective you can make your writing, the better. And it's even down to structure. I mean, some of the things I learned on Ship 30 is that there's a visual rhythm, if you like. As humans, we scan the page when we first look at something. We don't necessarily just immediately start at the start and read word by word, line by line. We kind of skim the page. So if you know that, you can set up your, whatever you're writing, whether it's an email or a Slack message or whatever, to be visually enticing and appealing. And then people will scan it and they're kind of, that makes sense. Let me go back to the top and actually read, because this feels like it has something valuable. And another thing that's important with this whole content writing is, the 2 year test is one way you can think about what content to create. But whichever method there are other methods that are escaping me right now. But the thing they all have in common is, you have to think about the audience rather than thinking about yourself. And that is absolutely key in our work. Like, it's just fundamental in our work, because a lot of us will complain that no one cares about testing. But no one is going to care about testing. Like, we love testing because we love testing. That adage, that cliche around nobody wants a drill, they want a hole in the wall. So we as testers are like going on about this drill called testing, and it's how amazing it is. And they're like, I don't care about the drill. I want a hole in the wall. Why are you telling me about this drill? So we need to figure out how to position testing and talk. It's like Fight Club. We need to talk about testing without talking about testing. We need to talk about the outcome that testing enables for people, the people who consume our work, because that's what they care about. You know, I don't think he was the first person to talk about that concept, but it was the first person I remember talking about it so robustly was Keith Klain. So he's all over LinkedIn right now. He's kind of binned off Twitter, but follow him on LinkedIn. Because he talks about this concept, this idea of if ever somebody from the C-level in your organization comes to ask you about actual testing, you have felt like you have blown it, like you're in deep shit. Like they should not have to care about that. Do you know what I mean? Like why are they asking you such minute details about it? They should have an understanding, and you as quality professionals or testing specialists or whatever should be able to articulate our value in terms of what the business care about. And I fail at that. Many others fail at that. And I think that is why we don't get the traction. So this content creation stuff, I'm telling you people, it's the secret sauce. My friend Ronald Cummins John, he talks about it in his book, Leading Quality, around talking, you know, learning about sales and marketing so you can position your work in the most effective way to get the attention of the people you want to see it. So it's the difference between saying, God, I'm probably going to butcher this, but like, it's the difference between saying, oh, I ran 10,000 tests and there are no problems. Everything is fine. They all passed. You can talk about that. Like, or you could say, so I investigated the, we can still sell our most popular product on, you know, Amavern or whatever, right? We can still sell it. It's like, and I've tried it with this card, that card, the other card, and we're good. Oh, and I also made sure that when we do refunds, we're not over refunding, because we had a problem with that. We had, you know, we changed X and blah, blah, something like that. Like frame the work in terms of the business value rather than purely talking about testing. And that's
telling a story, right? That's the key, right? Because the story has many actors. It has the people who are affected by change, people that affect change, the people that fund, and there's all these different actors that play parts in it. And the quality narrative and stuff which we talk about in Leading Quality book and many other places, it absolutely is that. And so actually, I guess that's where writing and all those things comes in really nicely, because it's telling a story. It's you know, there is a, hopefully it's not all war and peace all the time, although I might have written some blogs that have been too long. But you're right. It's understanding context and being able to shape and tell that story that's relevant to an audience to be able to consume. Mm-hmm. And I looked on the socials just to try and remind myself where I was at 2 years ago, because you sort of brought it up. And I was just beginning my journey of working with education professionals to create courses to introduce people to quality engineering, quality practices, different pieces along that journey, sort of break things down into useful segments so that we can introduce folks who maybe have no software understanding or no appreciation for testing, and to really break down why these things are important, who this will affect, things that we should and shouldn't sort of consider, introducing heuristics and useful things like different attribution, so people don't just take your own wisdom, because let's face it, let's share the wisdom with the people that know the other good stuff. And that's a really interesting thing to look back on, because I didn't really talk about my journey on working out how the hell to talk about my profession to folks, in a way that would be able to be consumable educational content. That's a hurrah. I should maybe write about those things. Maybe it'll inspire me about it. Who knows?
Well, in the point of telling your own story too, I think one of the things I've struggled with the most is so often I come up with an idea and I realize, oh, 8 million people have written about this or blogged or anything about it, but it's not my story either. It's not my voice. And so if I'm not connecting with their story, maybe somebody else like me needs to hear me say it. And that, like, for the longest time, that was just this huge roadblock for me. And I'd like to say I've gotten over it, but I have like a backlog of ideas where I have tossed them aside still because I'm like, eh, there's a million blogs about that already. But I do have to openly remind myself that like my story and my spin and my understanding on it might make it click for somebody else too.
And
That is.
some of the best TV shows and movies tell stories from different perspectives, right? Where you see totally different angles and backstories and all these things, and you can sort of begin to find different angles that you would never have appreciated if you'd only ever taken it from that one tunnel vision of one person.
Yeah.
Such a good point about narratives and stories you've both made there. Because what all the if you think what is it that makes you say that was a good story or click with something, whether it's a book or a tweet or a blog post? And I'm pretty sure it's either we empathize deeply with the protagonists, which is only one step removed from actually feeling like I am the protagonist in this story. Like that is me, that's my story. Like I am in the story. And that's what
Absolutely.
you're trying to do. You're trying to reach that connection. So if you spend a lot of time talking about, you know, in the con if you bring it back to testing, if you're spending a lot of time talking about, like, I did this or I did that in a way that just puts people off and they can't relate to, well, it's like, great, you put all these, you know, gajillion tests through the automated test predictinator thing, and okay, that said it was green. I don't know why I should care about that. That's all about you. Like, whoop-de-doo, you know? And so we need to get better at framing things that we care about in terms that other people care about. And that's
It's
all about narrative.
always about the why, my friend. You can go your Simon Sinek lines and things like that now, like. But you're right. Like, there isn't a reason for all this information. I've had it on projects before where it's like, how are you, what information are you gonna record and save and report and this, that, and the other. It's like, well, what's relevant? Why would I need to store this stuff? Why would I need to do that? Who is the audience to whom I'm presenting this? And that's all. It all informs how much, like, not everyone has to have sat and watched the extended version of the Lord of the Rings trilogy to get the whole story. And some folks don't want to spend, I don't know, 14 hours watching all of those things to be able to get the gist of the story, and
Yeah,
don't
some of
care
us
about.
watch the 45-minute cartoon.
Some don't want to have the Silmarillion as well, just to sort of really get deeper into the story. But some people, like Peter Jackson, want to try and eke out on that, and different audiences need that sort of relative.
That is such a that's another good point that I could rabbit on about, actually. You just made another excellent point, because should you go to film school, learn how to direct, then become a director with enough credibility to go to a Hollywood studio and say, I need a gajillion dollars to go and make 9 hours of film, which would require me to make 100 hours of film, and edit out the other 91 hours so that we can make this blockbuster film. You could do that, or you could write a tweet about a very tiny, hairy individual who finds a magic ring and goes on an adventure and see if anyone cares.
And if that's a tool that didn't exist in those times as well. It's like
but
it's a,
short it, stories did.
It's like a capsule moment, and people have been able to take small things and make them big, and
but
so I think there's a different audience for those different bits, and
oh
well, not necessarily, right? Because what you're looking for is signal, or at least this is what they particularly teach on Ship 30. But all of these content creation experts talk about this. They kind of say, you've got to hit publish. So things like Ship 30, which is about writing, and things like Ali Abdaal's part-time YouTuber Academy, which is about YouTube and video, they talk about the key thing is to publish and then look at the look at the feedback.
It sounds all very, very, it's very agile, isn't it?
There's a way to communicate an idea. You know, it could just be a tweet, and then it could be, you know, a short form blog post. We can turn it into a thread, and you can turn it into a book, you can turn it into something else, turn it into a conference talk or a video course or a newsletter or something like that.
Yeah.
All of the above.
And you can refine these things, but sometimes you've got in your head what the whole picture should be like, and you will get feedback that is no. And no, but you might have that relentless idea that you put away. And on the movie front, like Sylvester Stallone did this with Rocky, right? He got turned down by a bunch of studios. None of them wanted him as the leading man. He hadn't done all the film score stuff. And look at the masterpiece that was Rocky and how that franchise shaped it. Like, I think, you know, feedback is important. Super, super important, but let's not, like, you know, think about our ideas as rubbish if you don't get positive feedback. I think that's quite an important thing to have. Like, there's a reason for us as testers. We've got this gut, we've got this desire to sort of share these things, we've got this curiosity, and we've got a desire to push things forward and improve stuff, and we want to share those ideas with people. Just because some people don't give you the feedback that motivates you doesn't mean you're wrong. And that this can be hard to get feedback off folks sometimes as well. Like, I've shared documents in the work and said, please take the time, read this, look at me, look it through, give me some feedback, and got literally nothing back from anybody. How is that actionable and helpful?
It depends how you frame it, right? I mean, that could be classed as feedback.
It's true.
Well, in that instance, I accepted it as I will carry on.
Yeah.
Yeah. Silence is compliance. We're moving forward. But I think that's one of the reasons that I struggle with blog writing. I don't get the same feedback as I do when I post something short form on LinkedIn, or I'm at a conference and I get to do that longer form and I get immediate feedback, and I know exactly where I need to alter this conversation for later, or you know, I get to have a great dialogue on LinkedIn with everybody chiming in. Whereas a blog might just sit there and I go, well, a lot of people have read it, but nobody said anything about it, or there's no comments here.
The odds are if you post it to a blog, unless you're James Clear or something, or Tim Ferriss, that nobody has read the bloody blog.
That's true.
But like you say, if you post on LinkedIn where the eyeballs are, or if you present at a conference where the attention is, all of a sudden you get amazing feedback. So it's not that your blog post is terrible. It's just, it's in a desert.
Yeah. Oh yeah. And it is harder to continue on in that path, I think, when you don't have that feedback, to continue to feel motivated and to grow in it. and all of those things that we look for in content creation.
No, I was just thinking, like, on the feedback line, like, it's, I think this is where sometimes we have to be purposeful in seeking that feedback as well. Just putting stuff out there and expecting feedback isn't the same thing as, like, actually going and asking for it, because let's not forget, like, when stuff goes on telly and the people phone up the in the UK, they phone up Ofgem to make comment, that will almost always be negative comment about the thing that was on the telly. It won't be about, hey, I just wanted to say this content that was created was really positive, lovely stuff. Thanks very much. It's very often it can be, especially if it's like a faceless kind of environment. Negative feedback can be what you get. And I think you shouldn't go seeking positive feedback. Although, you know, we're trying to confirm things. It's like experimentation. I think David talks about that quite a bit as a former science teacher. And we're trying to confirm hypotheses and sort of build out these ideas and sort of get some confirmations. We do little experiments with these pieces. And these posts and these contents and these various things are a way of us trying to put stuff out there and find them. And you're trying to see if, like, that you can, I can grow this plant in this corner of the garden, but I can't grow it here. Why is that? What's the soil like? Is the sun hitting this bit? Am I feeding it the right sort of things? All these sorts. There's a reason. And we will all find our place at different times. This field will be fallow, and we need to give that a bit of time to move on. I think stuff gets boring for yourself and a bit generic and a bit meh after a while, if it's just always the same thing, the same motivation, the same voice. Is like, we need a bit of variety. It's why we say you don't just test the same thing all the way. You should attack it from different directions and try and find and explore. It's like exploratory testing is exploring stuff. It's not walking that trodden path all the time. And I think there's a lot to be said for not just saying, this is how it worked, so this is how I will always do it.
Yes. Yeah, definitely. And there's so many options out there, right? Like, things that I use every day now didn't even exist 2 years ago. So it's a little bit of an exploratory testing all by itself of, you know, there's this new platform out. Let's see what it does and who's there and what kind of interaction I get from it. And then if it's, you know, not everything you hoped and dreamed for, maybe a year from now it will be. So let's try it again.
I'm going to ask a question that I haven't prepped you on.
Exciting.
Wait, there was prep? Did I miss the prep?
No, that's the best way. Chris does a podcast. This is how we roll. So the question here I kind of got for you is, looking back over any content you've created, is there anything that you still look at and go, did I sound wise? Yeah, when I said those sorts of things, like, that you've maybe forgotten about something you've put out there and just gone, oh, that sounds good. That's something that I might actually recommend somebody go and read or listen to or consume, even though it's not been at the forefront of my mind. Is like, because we can be proud of the routine, we can be proud of the journey of finding out information, but is there anything out there you think, that's really interesting, I quite like that idea, I'm going to use that?
I think there's always a piece of my work that I'm super proud of, or a line that I go, did that come out of me? You're like, oh, I sound smarter than I thought. So there's always a chunk that I think I hold on to and maybe even reuse, because it does get my brain going into different ideas and things like that. But I think there's also pieces of the same piece of writing or video content that I, you know, just skip those five lines. They were, I don't know what I was thinking.
I felt like that last year when I was writing stuff, and somebody else asked a question, oh, what do you think about topic X? Oh, I think I've wrote about that, and I'll go and grab the link to my post and I'll share it with them. And I'm obviously I'm rereading the post again after quite a while. I'm like, I think I said this to somebody, but I was like, holy shit, it actually sounds like I know what I'm talking about. And that was right. That was a weird, I was like, whoa, I actually know
It's
what
a
I'm talking
weird feeling.
about. And it just felt, it was really affirming and really like, it really built my, I felt good about myself. You know what I mean? Like I was like, oh wow, I do have some credibility here. Like this makes sense.
I definitely know that feeling when you look back and you think, oh, damn, I am good.
That's what I was hoping to hear. Let me put that on there. But yeah, it's nice to be able to look through and not just have put that stuff out there and forgotten about it. It's nice to know that, oh, that's good. I can be proud of that thing. I can put that link to those posts that I did and be proud of that so that if somebody ever looks me up, I'll know what they're talking about rather than that thing I posted and completely forgot about that was rubbish. I'll actually know about it and I can sort of point to those things and say there is value in that stuff today and I can be proud of that content that I created. That's a really, like sometimes giving yourself that feedback can be even more valuable in hindsight than than getting it off other folks. We could, I mean, let's face it, we can talk about this for a very long time, but we probably shouldn't because otherwise we might lose podcast listeners. But can I just say from the bottom of my heart, thank you both of you for coming on. I think the listeners have very much enjoyed having a greater variety of hosts join us on Testing Peers, and thank you for doing that. You really are testing peers because we all are, let's be honest. So we'll bring a close to there. We're going to try and extract all of these things we've talked about and put them into the show notes. Listener, if you're thinking, I want to find out some information, we'll put the contact details down for Vern if you want to find out Barefoot Coach, and you
Please.
can reach out to myself and Tara or any of the testing peers, folks. We want to get your feedback. We want to hear about your content. We want to read your content. We want to consume it. We want to benefit from those sorts of things. So please contact us at testingpeers.com. Find us on the socials. We're on most of them, although we don't know what's going on at Mastodon right now in our heads. We can't really navigate it very well. We're not very clever. We've got an Instagram. We haven't done anything for 2 years, but we are there. You can contact us. Better off reaching us on LinkedIn and Twitter, probably. But please like, share, subscribe. Tell your friends about an episode you found good. Tell one of us something that you found really interesting. It really does help to sort of reaffirm, sharpen our own ideas, and hopefully provide value to the community and share those ideas going forwards. So thank you both once again, Tara and Vernon.
For now, it's goodbye from the testing peers.
Goodbye. Goodbye.